everybody. Thanks for joining us for another edition of Talking Tigs. I'm Scott Girard. Joining me, as always, Tommy Johnson, Daniel Zellinger. Got another LSU loss for to go over with you. Just kidding, folks. I mean, it was actually not horrible. I don't know. I guess we're all going to go over that with you here in a moment. But yeah, Tigers did not pull out an upset in T-Town. Bama won that one 20-9, but I still think LSU, you know, we still had a respectable showing, you know, somewhat. But before we get into all that, wanted to check in with Tommy and Daniel, hear what you guys thought, also hear, you know, see how you're doing. But yeah, I don't know. I think I'm at the point where it's just, I don't expect the Tiger, I don't expect to be just revived. You know, I'm not going to just see something where I'm going to go, oh my gosh, we've completely seen a turnaround. It's just, all right, well, you know, we're going to have some little moral victories here and there and see who our coaching search turns up. That's about where I am. But other than that, how are you guys?
Man, good to be with you. Good to be, you know, another edition of the podcast. Game, we played Alabama, so you got something to talk about. A game True. Occurred. College football still going on. I spent a little bit of time at Alex Box yesterday before the game. So that was a positive.
Maybe we should just talk about that.
Yeah, we'll just talk about baseball. Let's just be what if we were a 365-day LSU baseball podcast?
Could be.
But anyways. Yeah, disappointing loss, but I think all three of us picked LSU to lose. From my perspective, I mean, LSU lost by less than I thought they would. They gave up fewer points than I thought they would.
Yep.
The offense put up less points than I thought they would. so good and bad, but excited to be on again on this fine edition of Talking Tigs.
Yes, hello, listeners. Coming off that Alabama game, which most LSU fans have circled on their calendar as the game of the year in most respects, although we've been on the losing side much more often than the winning, at least this century. And it was another poor performance, and Nussmeier struggled. The whole team struggled, really, except for a few key plays on the defensive side. So frustrating there, but not entirely unexpected, considering Alabama is one of the best teams in the country, and LSU is definitely not that, although that's what the hope was going into the season. So we are down one coach in Brian Kelly. Frank Wilson was on the sideline looking studious in his glasses, and now we move on to Arkansas, who they've lost 7 games in a row, so can we scrounge a win? I hope so, but not so sure, which I guess we'll get into, but at least the rest of the college football is exciting, even if LSU isn't necessarily.
True. No really big upsets this week, although it did come close. I mean, Indiana pulled one out very late. And I don't know. I mean, LSU, I don't think we were really upset-minded. I mean, maybe we, on the surface, we wanted to be, but I just know that when it comes down to talent, coaching, and execution, LSU was just, we didn't have that dog in us. But I did agree with you, Daniel. I did like Frank Wilson's glasses. I thought it just brought a different look to the sideline, something we don't seen since, I don't know when, probably before they were photographing coaches on the sideline. I don't think we've seen a coach with glasses, but
we have. It reminded me of Jimbo Fisher. Jimbo Fisher always had those spectacles on.
Readers don't count, Tommy. I'm sorry. Readers don't. No, but he wasn't a head coach at LSU.
Oh, but, you mean at LSU? I thought you meant just a coach in general.
No, definitely. Well, I don't know. We'll probably have to take a dive into that maybe in the offseason, see who does wear glasses. But for now, we know Frank Wilson does, at least when he's head coach. And I don't know. I got to admit, I think it was, like I said, respectable performance. I don't know what we thought we might see, you know, after firing, a good portion of our coaching staff and our athletic department. Not that we didn't fire our president, but we still were looking for one. We have that now. And we have an athletic director moving forward. I think all that remains is a head coach. We'll get to that in a second, but I don't know. I think for coming off a bye week, interim coach, LSU did fine. And in some respects, you know, just looking at the score in the fourth quarter. I mean, if you were watching the whole game, if you just looked at the score in the fourth quarter, Alabama 17, LSU 9, they're only a touchdown and a two-point conversion away from tying this. Okay, Tigers are putting up a fight. But if you actually watch the game, you knew that we could probably drive the length of the field multiple times over if we wanted to, but we're just not going to score a touchdown. And if we get close, our quarterbacks are just going to run to the other end zone, despite whatever they're coached and what you think their natural instincts would be. But yeah, guys, we just were absolutely god awful in multiple aspects of the game. One being our red zone offense. I mean, you can't trust us to score if our lives depended on it, you know. Not to inject a dark theory, but if Tiger Stadium was being held for ransom, all you got to do to save your people is just score a touchdown in the red zone, we're not gonna, like, who's like, oh, okay, thank God, we're good. Nobody.
It's like a Saw game.
Right.
Like, let's play a game.
I know.
it's first and 10 on your opponent's 10-yard line. Now, all you have to do to save your loved one is put the ball in the end zone. And LSU's just like, kill him. Just kill my yeah. loved one. It's
impossible.
Yeah. But that's really where we're at. And I mean, I commend the coaching staff for finding new ways to try and win. You know, they injected Van Buren a lot later than halfway through the fourth quarter. I think we inserted him closer to the end of the third quarter, right? I mean, we gave Garrett a shot. I think that's where we're at now. It's not just the coaching staff. It's not just the horrible offensive line. I think our starting quarterback, you know, is somewhat of a liability, but, I don't know. Like I said,
this might have been Garrett's worst game of the season.
Absolutely, it was. Yeah. I think I've just tapered my expectations way down again this week. And I humbly say I'm just here to see what good highlights and what good moments we can have with the rest of the season. That being said, I don't know, guys. Like I said, overall, it wasn't completely horrible. I still think we see the facets of this LSU program. Even if LSU did convert on one or two of those drives, which would have made it like a close, if not tied game. I mean, when it comes down to it, I feel like they would have just gutted it out over us just because of not talent, but just execution.
In some ways, I mean, they're just a better team. Like the all better around. Team is going to win.
Yeah.
I think that, I mean, you mentioned it. I mean, we go into the red zone four times and come away with zero touchdowns. You can't compete on the road in the SEC with that. It's just unacceptable. I mean, really the final score should have been 20-12. Damian Ramos misses a 30-yard field goal.
Yeah, that was the tone setter right at the beginning because LSU stopped Alabama on fourth down on their first possession. Like, we were feeling kind of good. And then we drive down the field and then it was like, can we go up 7-0 right off the rip? And then 7 turns into 0 just like that.
I mean, this was Ty Simpson's probably one of his weaker games of the season. So we dodged a bullet there, I think. I think that all things would have set up for LSU. Like, once you got into the flow of the game, like you said, Daniel, I mean, the momentum was with us up until that missed field goal. And from there, it was kind of, at least offensively, it was downhill from there. One thing I did appreciate, Frank Wilson going into this game said, we're going to run the ball. You're going to see the run game a lot more. And it was pretty much a success. I mean, I think Harlan Berry looked pretty good as the true freshman. Yeah. Caden Durham had a few moments too, but I think Harlan is clearly the RB1 for LSU moving forward. I'm excited to see what he can do next year. I think that, I had no problem with them. And you know, like in the A&M game, the way they benched Garrett, I thought that was a kind of a classless move by Kelly. Like the game was over.
You mean the specific timing of it?
The specific timing. Correct. With this game, with this one, I had no problem with them moving to Van Buren. Now, I don't think he really gives us much different. I mean, like he's
yeah, no. Hard to
just
say.
Kind of 6-7. Like,
he's got escapability.
Kind of, you know, like he takes sacks just as bad as Garrett does, but
only in the red zone.
Yeah. but I would say, but I had no problem with him benching him. And then you saw Frank getting into Garrett.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of interesting to see. You know, some people on Twitter saying Frank Wilson's doing his best Brian Kelly impression. But
I think that would have been any coach in America, right? Like now I see, okay, I mean, we gave Brian Kelly a lot of flack for his, you know, character and integrity. But to me, that shows, you know what, we'll back off on Kelly with Nuss, because obviously it wasn't Kelly. It was just Nuss just not, I don't know, just not being prepared or something.
I mean, you know, the people, and I kind of believe it. I feel like you see it on the field. It doesn't feel like the preparation was, you know, that this team has been putting in, I shouldn't say putting in the work. I mean, like, if you're an SEC team, you're putting in like the allotted hours, but it doesn't feel like they've gelled and put in that extra work. Like they talk about with Joe and Jamar and Justin Jefferson, the summer of 1,000 catches or whatever it was, or 10,000 catches.
Right.
Like, I don't think that happened with this team, with this quarterback, with these wide receivers.
No.
So it's disappointing. The thing that I really hate to see is I hate to see a fifth year senior, number 18, the captain of your team, you know, like go out like this.
Mm-hmm.
I've rooted for the guy. As I was watching the game, I was thinking about, I still remember his commitment video, like with the Marcus High School highlights and all this stuff. And him talking about, like, it always sticks out to me, cause he talked about how he was from like Lake Charles, but I don't think he'd ever lived in Lake Charles. I think he like basically lived in Dallas, but I remember being super excited for Garrett. And so I hate to see it end this way. But I think that the proof is just on the field. We've seen so much of this season that there's only so much that you can blame on a bad offensive line, a bad offensive coordinator and Joe Sloan, all of that.
Right. Overall, just outplayed, outcoached, outmatched. The fact that we didn't score a touchdown, I asked AI, when was the last time LSU football didn't score a touchdown in a game? And I'm not sure if this is right, but it said it was the game of the century, 2011 versus Alabama, 9-6. So if that's, or did you have a correction?
Well, yeah, the championship game after that.
Oh, you're right. Because that was 21.
That was game of the century part two.
Yeah. Well, Alabama's had our number in that regard, I guess. But either way, 14 years, a long time.
We didn't even cross the 50-yard line in that one. Mm.
So that was pretty rough. And then you mentioned the miscues, like the missed field goal. We fumbled two times. We fumbled more than two times. We were thankfully got lucky on a couple of recoveries.
What about how our best, on I forget which drive it was, but on one of our drives, the best play of the drive,
like a seven yard fumble
a fumble ahead.
Yeah, our players were getting injured. We couldn't stop having false starts to save our life. Every other play seemed like a false start. Meanwhile, Bama had like no penalties the entire game, except for the one face mask where Nussmeier's head got twisted sideways. And
that was pretty gruesome, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I feel bad for Garrett on that one.
Yeah. And Nussmeier's just overall decline. He's kind of the inverse of his former self, which was everybody was like, he's this kind of overconfident gunslinger who's overthrowing his receivers, and he just chunks it down the field every single play, and we've got to like kind of corral him in. And now he's timid. He's he threw the ball into the dirt. He doesn't know like which read to make, which decision to take out on the field. He did his patented panic timeout like early in the first quarter, and Tommy blew up the Talking Tigs group chat about that one, but you just knew it was coming. Mm-hmm. And overall, like it's almost a head case of a quarterback, which is really sad, because like Tommy said, this was a guy who was probably a top five, maybe number one overall quarterback, Heisman favorite, and now he's like potentially undraftable almost, or it's like what team wants to take a risk on this?
It's like that. It's like that Dr. Pepper commercial where it's like, our quarterback's about to hit the draft slide.
And that's rough, especially because our defense really didn't play that bad. I mean, we outscored Alabama in the second half 6-3, which is not much, but you hold Alabama to 3 second-half points. You expect to be in that game, and we kind of were even at the very end, even with how bad everything had gone. You just needed the offense to do a little bit of something, and we couldn't muster that. So a lost game physically and emotionally, and not too much to play for the rest of the way, but maybe a moral victory against Arkansas at home on the way, or an even more crushing defeat to the 2-7 Razorbacks, which we may get into here in a minute. So tough to watch. It kind of was what we expected, just in a different form, and on to the next one.
I mean, did anybody else feel like in that first quarter, when I was watching, I was like, oh my gosh, are we watching 2011 again? There was even the almost like interception where the two guys had the ball similar to like Eric Reed.
Yep.
I was like, dang, are we like, is this going to be 9-6 again? Is this going to be the 2025 version? No, it wasn't. But I will say, I think the best part of this game, and I'm interested to hear your thoughts. What about that little promo reel they put on of like all the past LSU Alabama games and like the cool highlights and stuff? I was like, dang, this is the best thing I'll see all night.
It was pretty cool.
You were right.
And people online were saying like college football is better when LSU Alabama is a real game, or like where the hype is there. And unfortunately LSU hasn't really brought the hype the last couple of years.
Well, and honestly, like think about it this way. Like it's really unfortunate. I mean, that's the way we're going out on this rivalry. Because from moving forward, this won't be an automatic game every year for us, which is really,
it'll just have that much more meaning then. But
I don't know. There's something about that you know, that weekend in November, and I'm worried that like when they're making the schedules, like because it's not a set in stone, you're playing them every week, that eventually we're going to start playing, we'll play Alabama in September one year. Like, that's not right.
I don't know. I mean, we need to mix it up though, because they've had the lion's share of this series for a decade or more. So
maybe so,
just throw it out the window. We don't have to play them after a bye on the first week of November either. I don't know why we have to keep that. Like, we got rid of the Arkansas around Thanksgiving thing. So why?
See, I didn't like that either. I just feel like there's so much.
It's so iconic. It was such a good game. LSU Arkansas around Thanksgiving.
No, I agree with you. That's okay. What I'm saying. Like, yeah. I don't like getting rid of any of it.
I know,
like,
but
keep the Florida game, keep the Alabama. Like, we don't play. We're not going to play Florida anymore. We're not going to play. We haven't played Auburn in however long.
I know, now's when we want to play them too.
Yeah, really.
anyway,
it's like, I don't want to play Oklahoma and Tennessee, to be honest.
No, not really. But just to go back to what you'd said earlier, I don't think it matters who stepped into coach now, right? Like, Nick Saban could take over tomorrow. I don't think he's going to get any, well, I don't know, maybe he would, any better production out of this offensive line. Like, I think even if Joe Burrow had a year of eligibility and he could come back tomorrow and start the next three games, I don't know. I think LSU still takes a loss or two. I think the O-line is just that dysfunctional, and we're just not going to see much improvement there. We've tried a different quarterback. It's the same thing. I mean, it does say something that we can get down the field to the red zone, but then we just can't capitalize. I feel like there's like a, I don't know, like we got to talk to a sports psychologist or something about that as a team, because it's just like, you could see it in two red zone appearances with both quarterbacks. What did Nuss do? I mean, you can pull up, there's video of Nuss where there's a number 8, the running back runs out to the side. He's wide open. He's probably got 10 or 15 yards in front of him. And I feel like Nuss could see it, but then he turns his back and runs towards the other end zone, right into this defensive lineman's waiting arms. And it's like, we settle for a field goal or a missed field goal. I forget which one it was. But then Van Buren almost did the same thing. And that was after two false starts by one lineman. So I feel like this offense is doomed. We just have to limp to the finish line. That's where I'm at.
One other thing that we didn't mention was that the wide receiver is not exactly helping Nussmeier and Van Buren out. Like Tre'Davious Green dropping a critical pass at the end, which I don't think we would have won, but if we could have gotten that first down, like we maybe could have had a chance to make something happen. And it's like, well, this is just the story of the game for LSU.
That was a terrible drop. I mean, he's wide open. I thought Aaron Anderson looked decent. He's kind of a grinder.
Yeah, I mean, I wish we could have seen, like, if he, Barry and Brown, and Ness were all on the same page, who knows what we could have seen. I don't know about Bower Sharp. I mean,
I had
high hopes. Same with Tre'Davious at the beginning of the season. I mean, I guess until recently he was delivering. But, yeah, how do you drop that wide open? I guess maybe we just have to throw to him in the end zone where he's just reaching above people. Then he will grab it. But it's just
like that thing where you're too open.
Right.
Like you're like, wait, like no one's around me.
Yeah. There must be someone I can't see that's about to hit me. Oh, no. Oh, wait, but I dropped it. I don't know. I feel like, it just goes back to what Kelly said. It's like we can't ever have anybody all just producing or executing at the same time, like in a single drive. They couldn't get it. There was a drop here, miss block there, offensive, foul here. I think that's just who we are. But that, to me, that goes back to a culture thing. Yeah, we're getting a new coach, but I mean, some of this is on the players. Like sometimes you see players get a new coach and they can turn around. They just had to hit the right buttons. I don't think we've seen that yet. Do you think it's just an issue of too many, misvalued or undervalued guys or misinterpreted guys in the recruiting ranks or just portal misses? Do you think it's different under a new regime or is this, also a player issue?
Like a talent issue, personnel issue?
Something. Yeah, I mean, we spent a good money out of the portal, and we thought we had some good investments. I mean, I feel much better seeing what Bryce Underwood hasn't done with Michigan. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like there's talent in good areas, but unless everybody, all 11 guys are executing at the same time, yeah, it's going to be, we're lucking into certain plays, I think.
I think that, I mean, if you go kind of down the line, I mean, we talked about it before on this podcast, we spent notoriously $18 million building this roster. Most of that was spent on ticks. Yeah. Like as a fan base, you can say we, because Brian Kelly told us all to donate, but
yeah, he did.
But most of that is spent on the defense. I think that investment has paid off. Like our defense has been markedly better than it was last year. Mansoor Delane, who's one of our top prospects brought in through the portal, is arguably the best corner in college football. AJ Halsey and Tamarcus Cooley have been solid. Patrick Payton and Jack Pyburn have been solid. So I think those investments have paid off. We are spending a lot of money from what you hear on Garrett Nussmeier. We've talked about him. I mean,
really?
I think they spent a good amount of money to keep him for his fifth year.
Are you serious?
You had to. He's got all these sponsorships and stuff that.
I mean, he's Gordon. He's Kane. I mean, yeah, he's with the Arch Manning on Kane, which is actually hilarious. Like, I don't know if y'all get the Kane's commercial. When you see, like, on your broadcast,
I know what you're talking about with her riding the car and with Archie, and then Nussmeier's like in the back.
Yeah, Nussmeier's. So it's like Arch Manning, who's like, not doing great, but making a ton of money, and then Garrett's in the back. It's a weird commercial, but anyways, and then then you. I think our most notable acquisitions from the portal on the offensive side are Bower Sharp. I think objectively is just not paid off. Nick Anderson has been basically quiet the entire season. Barry and Brown has had flashes, not been day to day solid.
He's definitely got good talent. Like
he's got the speed.
He's a playmaker. Anderson's definitely a playmaker.
Nick Anderson or Aaron Anderson?
I'm sorry, Aaron Anderson.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, Aaron Anderson's great, but he was there to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
I just mean like new portal, you know.
Oh, right, right.
New portal guys. So I think that and you know, maybe this falls on Kelly or I don't know who this fall. I think it does kind of fall on Kelly. We did not really get anybody or our offensive line. Our offensive line has not been good, even with some additions. Like we added the center,
Braylon Moore.
Yeah.
Now he's been better than what we had last year in, wasn't it Chester?
Now Chester is costing us on a different spot.
Yeah. But I mean, he was awful at center. So we've had a few upgrades there, but our offensive line in general has been, no matter what, how you frame it, how you switch them around, change positions, they're not good. You know, maybe we should have invested a little bit more there. I think that's definitely something you could consider.
Yep. Pancake Factory, like Texas, they were paying offensive linemen like $50,000 each. But I mean, if you can build your own offensive line that you want, then sure. I don't know. I think some of the guys we got out there, I don't know. They're just, maybe they're not ready or they're, I don't know.
It's a mix of a few things. Cause you got like a guy like Kyrius Kern, who's having to play left tackle as a true freshman.
Yeah.
He's getting absolutely manhandled and not doing us any favors, but he's a true freshman in the SEC. His first game he had to start was against A&M, right? Like,
yeah, but he's like, if someone was ready to go, then that's one thing. Like if he had maybe he does have a raw talent, but with the right coaching, yeah, maybe he could improve over the season instead of, like you said, with Nussmeier, just decline.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. And I think that, and the reason that I said, I didn't really finish my thought, I guess, is like the reason that I say that I think you put this on Kelly is, probably 4 weeks ago, I distinctly remember him in a press conference saying, I've coached elite offensive lines. Like I had elite offensive lines at Notre Dame. And this group is elite in the making. Like they're going to be very good. I know the foundations of a solid offensive line. It's like, well, that's just not true. Like this group is not good. And I remember distinctly when we hired Kelly in 2021, on this podcast, we talked about like, well, the one thing you can count on with Brian Kelly is that the offensive line play is going to be solid. He's had a track record at Notre Dame of putting out offensive line, you know, solid offensive linemen. So, I think maybe they overestimated his, you know, way to pick his recruiting and didn't go to the portal to get new guys. I'm not entirely sure, but it's definitely costing us, as you see if you watch even 2 minutes of an LSU game.
Yeah.
Yep. Development overall poor. And that's a thing because we talked about it last week, but there's just very few players you could point to as like success stories where we've kind of grown them up into full-time starters, stars, NFL products. On our team,
there's only the offensive line position or across the board?
Well, at all positions, really. I mean, right now, the only ones you could really point to is maybe Garrett Nussmeier, who hasn't been great, obviously. You've got, I guess, Harold Perkins and Whit Weeks, who was hurt, and Perkins has been hurt and kind of hit or miss on the defensive side.
I mean, I think Weeks will be an NFL player.
Yeah, so I agree.
Mansoor Delane's he's not one of ours. Yeah,
and that was coming to my second point, and the thought is, like, we're getting all these guys in the portal, especially on the defensive side. And it's like, why do we have to get reach in the portal? It's because the internal development isn't necessarily there. True. And maybe that's kind of a boomer football take, is like, you have to embrace the portal at this day and age, but you want to have as much homegrown talent as possible. So you don't have to dip $5 million on maybe some unproven wide receiver or defensive back and use that strategically instead of as just a cure all.
Look at Ohio State. Like the reigning national champion from last year, if you look at their roster from last year, it's juniors, seniors, and sophomores that they have developed that they brought in through traditional high school recruiting, mm-hmm. with a few key portal additions like a Caleb Downs, who's the best defensive player in college football, that you know, went to Alabama to play for Saban. Saban leaves. He wants to find a new home. Ends up at Ohio State. I think you're exactly right. I think the same thing with, like, you look at like an Oregon team, like Dan Lanning has done a really good job of building his team from the ground up. Georgia does a great job of this too.
Yeah.
And then they ended up, but of course, like, then, you know, you don't want to go like the Dabo route where it's like, we just don't pull people in at all. It's like, well, no, yep. you're going to, if there's the best player in the country wants to come to your team, you shouldn't have just a policy of like, no, sorry, we don't take new additions. But I think you're right that you shouldn't just build your team off of the portal. Or if you do, it's going to cost you a lot. It might not work out, like what happened to Ole Miss last year. They built that team for that year. This was their chance. They brought in all these portal. They called, you know, Lane Kiffin was the portal king, all this, and it didn't work out for them. I think that Kelly and the Kelly regime, you know, we don't give him a ton of credit, but I think he did know that this year was like a make or break year for him. I don't think he knew that if he was going to get fired this year, but I think everybody around this program knew, like, we got to get this right. We got to make a playoff appearance. So we're going to invest today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can give him an A on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it just didn't work out because you still got to coach those guys. You can't just play five rounds a week and just expect your assistants to coordinate all this. Not that that's what happened, but, you know, rumors abound and all.
Not that that's what happened, but that's what happened.
So I don't know. So there's going to be a tell-all book or, you know, a tell-all interview at some point. But, yeah, apparently, you know, there just wasn't as much investment personally, maybe with the head coach or maybe with the – you know, the presumed starting quarterback, the heir apparent. And I don't know, I guess we'll see what happens the rest of the year. But like I said, it's pretty obvious that LSU is going to just, we're going to be lucky if we score more than if we break out of this stuck at 24 points. Maybe we'll do it against Western Kentucky, but again, that's not what we want. We want to score like 40 against Arkansas. You know, we want to score like 30 on the road against Oklahoma is like a good way to finish the season. But I just don't have confidence that our offense could do it individually. No. I think guys can here and there, but again, it's like you can't get down to the goal line. It's like, you know, first and goal, and then your quarterback runs 10 yards the other way, or you're on your own 10 yard line trying to go 90 yards and your wide open tight end just drops a simple ball. And it's just, you know, there's just, you know, I wouldn't bet all this betting stuff going on. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Brian Kelly was just like playing the short on everything, or just, I don't know. It's just like, it makes you wonder, right? It's like, we're not conspiratorial usually here on Talking Tigs, but sometimes it just makes you wonder when you underperform that much.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, you know, we want to put up 40 against Arkansas. We want to put up 30 against Oklahoma. I'm like, it's not happening. Like, we're not putting up 40 on, we won't put 40 up on double high school.
Well, starting with Arkansas this week, what do we think? LSU gets them at home. We've lost four straight games now. Three straight, four out of the last five. Arkansas has lost seven straight. They've actually been competitive in basically every game Notre Dame. Is like, you look at a team 2-7, you're like, this team is horrible. But then you look at the actual scores and like, they could have easily been like 6-3 or something and just had a few breaks go the other way. So definitely a tough challenge. And they got a pretty good dual threat quarterback, Taylen Green, and that's been a sore spot for our defense this season. Their offense is pretty good overall, so we say this every week, we're gonna have to put some points on the board to win, and I think that is true. But I think that maybe LSU squeaks this one out and Frank gets a win, but it definitely will be competitive. We're favored by 5.5, which maybe seems a bit excessive considering our recent performances.
We're gonna bring them down to our level.
Yeah, I'd like to say LSU just kind of goes in there and we get a solid win. But I guess the big question is, what's the quarterback situation going to be like, considering they were harder on Nussmeier and Van Buren ran most of the second half with middling to little success? Did they do kind of a dual scheme again, or is Nussmeier just, is he in the deep freeze for the rest of the season? That'll be interesting to see.
No, this is something I did notice, and I thought it worked well. It's like, what? You know, maybe we could have seen this earlier in the game, or excuse me, not earlier in the game, earlier in the season. Is, we know Nuss can't sit back there for long. Our offensive line is like Swiss cheese. Let's do a QB rollout. Let's do some misdirection. We did see that. He can't just sit in the pocket. Not only because he's not going to have much time, but also I just don't feel like he has like a good sense of where to go if he senses something coming in on him. So. Yeah, let's just mix them up. I say open up the playbook. Whatever we're feeling guarded against now, it's not going to help us. Just go for it.
Any thoughts, Tommy?
Yeah, I mean, I think that for one, it's at 11:45 kickoff. I think that I thought we passed
a law.
Well, I think because now it's November or something, like we can, like it's colder or something.
At least we get the pain over with early.
I think that, but you know what though? It kind of breaks up your day. You kind of lose a Saturday there. I don't know. I don't love it. I don't love it for our chances either. You're right, Daniel. Like, this is an Arkansas team. They lost to Ole Miss by a touchdown. They lost to Memphis by 1 point. They lost to Tennessee by 3. They lost to A&M by 3. And then they lost to Mississippi State by 3. So they, like you said, they could easily be, you know, what, 6-3 or something like that going into this game. I think we win, but I think it's ugly. I think our defense needs to show up. I was just checking to see if I could get a Whit Weeks, like, you know, what the most recent thing.
That was disappointing, like, because he was supposed to be like getting healthy for the Alabama game. And then what, that just didn't happen.
Said as recently, I think as Monday, that like, yeah, we expect him to play or something like that. So he didn't play. I as of right now, I don't think he's going to play against Arkansas, which I think is,
oh my gosh,
a huge deal for us. Man, now that I'm like thinking more and more about it, I actually think we might end up losing, because with Whit Weeks out. Okay, let's just put it this way. If Whit Weeks is out and Arkansas has a good running quarterback, we know we can't handle that. Harold Perkins can't spy.
No, he's good at being in the right place at the right time. But if someone's elusive, like if Diego Pavia was a statue, Perkins would have had like 3 sacks. Yeah. In that game.
With all that said, I'm going to I'll still pick LSU. I'll say we win 24
not 25.
Yeah, we're not. I'm not crossing that threshold. We're not putting up any more points.
You can't, Daniel.
I'm gonna say that Arkansas flips the script and takes down LSU, and the struggles continue for LSU. As much as I hate to do it, we're kind of stuck in a rut. So, a little bit lower scoring, but I'm gonna take Arkansas 27, LSU 20.
I'm holding out hope. I think Frank Wilson changes things up. They have another week now that they've executed what they thought could work, you know, with the bye week against Bama. Take what you can, you know, take the pluses, drop the minuses. I think LSU comes out on top 23-17.
Okay.
I would take any win at this point.
Our defense still is our defense.
All of us predicting low scoring games. Which I think I see that. I think that says our defense has a decent day, which, I mean, they've had a good season overall. Like, I don't think there's any reason to think they won't show up. But I'm optimistic. I think we need this win just for mm-hmm. Like, we had our first commit decommit today, and I
saw that.
Oh gosh, I don't remember his name, but
exactly.
but still, that's big. Like, that was the first one we'd had that we've lost since Kelly was fired, and so I think we need to show some signs of life. Losing at Tiger Stadium is never a good thing.
Yeah,
that because being said, I'll probably take Arkansas with the points though. Like, I think 6.5 is too much.
And a close one for LSU. LSU's stressful football decision. Either way. But yeah, it's the difference. I mean, assuming we beat Western Kentucky in the next week, which is almost not even a guarantee. They're actually pretty good for a group of five team. But you got to think we beat them. But that's six wins. And so we got Oklahoma at the last game. Looking at how we look, and that's probably a loss. So Arkansas is basically the difference between 7-5 and 6-6. And that's not a huge difference, but at least like you got a winning record with 7-5. And so that's a kind of in a Les Miles career record, but 6-6 is pretty poor, and you're tilting in the wrong direction there.
Be the second time this decade that we went 6-6, right? We went 6-6 in 2020. 2021
and 21 or 22. I thought we did it 2 years in a row.
I think that's right. We 22 was the Jaden year. We didn't get so that, right.
No, that was first year Brian Kelly. We went 9-3, won the West.
Yeah, second yeah, that was year 22. Right.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Anyways.
Well. I know it's like the end of the Orgeron years.
20 and 21 were the two bad years with the Orgeron. Yes.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
But with that, I don't know anything else with the college football landscape. I mean, like I said, there wasn't really any upsets. Indiana escaped. I think a few other teams, I wouldn't say escaped, but they won, and you know, they're doing fine. A&M handled Mizzou barely, you know, just fine. I think where I thought A&M was, I don't know, just waiting to be exposed, they haven't been. So I don't know, maybe they are the real deal. But, you know, you're going to have Alabama, probably Georgia, and, you know, all these other teams from these other conferences. So playoffs, it's going to be different. And, I mean, it sucks that we're going to be out of it because there is such, again, parity in college football. I know Ohio State's sitting there at the top like they're untouchable, but I don't know. It's like, who have they, like they did with LSU every single game of the season after game five, who have they played? What have they done? Who have they played?
They ain't played no one, Paul.
Right. Nobody yet. But yeah, exactly. There should be some good games this week. College Game Day just announced they're going to Pittsburgh for the first time in like 20 years, who's hosting Notre Dame. And basically Notre Dame's like last test on their kind of cruising into the playoffs. So if they can get past the Pitt team, is actually not bad.
Last test.
That's kind of my point. Like Pitt being the toughest game on the schedule. A few other good ones. Alabama plays host to Oklahoma. So Oklahoma beat Alabama last year, I think, at the end, to kind of mess them up. And then Georgia versus Texas. And that's a big one that probably would have been game day, but they already went to Athens.
Where's that? Oh, they're already in Athens. Okay.
Yeah. So is that this next week? Am I making? Yeah. Texas yeah, going to Georgia. Right. So that'll be the 7:30 PM ABC game. So that should be fun. I saw a weird scheduling thing that Texas has been in the SEC for what, 3 years now, and they've already played. This is going to be the third time they've played Georgia. Meanwhile, they have not played A&M like a single time, I think, or maybe once. And so they're like, "What's going on here? Like, why are we playing Georgia so much and not like our traditional rival A&M at all?" But I guess it's just the weird quirk of it.
I thought they played I thought A&M was supposed to be their last, like the last game of this, like their Thanksgiving game. Is that not right?
Well, maybe I think I'm saying like up to this point, like this is going to be like their third time against Georgia, but they've played A&M one time.
Because they've only been in for.
They were a storied rivalry before either of them joined the SEC.
Exactly. And Texas is kind of quietly sneaking back into the conversation here at 7-2 because they lost the first game to Ohio State, and then the kind of the stinker to Florida where DJ Lagway somehow turned into a good player again. I don't know if y'all saw, he threw another three picks and got benched like in the first quarter. They got blown out by Kentucky. Ooh, yeah. So basically every single quarterback who was hyped up going into the season is like not it. Like between Nussmeier, Cade Klubnik from Clemson, Lagway,
Sellers.
Yeah, Lenore Sellers. We've interacted with all these quarterbacks. Maybe it's LSU's curse. And then meanwhile, the ones that we didn't really know much about are doing okay. So should be fun, at least, even though LSU is not exactly a marquee matchup this Saturday.
Right. So speaking of all this, though, it's like all these other teams that have been, you know, achieving or overachieving. Then you look at Texas Tech. And they are overachieving. So it kind of makes you wonder now that we, you know, because LSU does have its presidents in place. It has now its full-time athletic director in place. Verge Ausberry is finally ascended to the throne he was born into, like the Lion King. Mm-hmm. It's about time. But then also LSU has a new president. What was his first name? Was it
Wade
Rouse? Of course, you all know him. He and his family have all those wonderful wonderful grocery store chains in Louisiana. Just kidding. It's somebody completely different, right? But it's close. It's very close.
Roose versus Rouse.
Roose like goose.
Roose like goose, not Rouse's.
Yeah.
But it was almost too – that could have been perfect because talk about NIL opportunity. Oh, well. Anyway, if there's anybody in Rouse's listening, talk to Gordon. But we have our president. We have our athletic director, and he is the search, apparently. So it remains to be seen who we go for next. I don't know. It's just interesting to see all these other, teams that have kind of been – in the background kind of doing well. Do you think LSU goes with somebody like that? Or do you think we're just kind of like just old school minded? We just need to get a name in here that, you know, that's done something in the past. Cause I don't know. I feel like it wouldn't hurt to take a chance, but then again, there's a lot of money on the line. Would you guys have any new thoughts after this other week of,
I would say Tulane had a good win on the road at Memphis, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, you know, John Summerall's a name that's been talked about, not just for LSU, but just for a lot of openings. I think he'll probably,
go somewhere.
He probably will go somewhere. Although this past week in a press conference, he openly addressed the coaching rumors and said, look, I've gotten Power Four jobs offers in the past, and I want to be at Tulane. This is where I want to be. So, of course, okay. I mean, we've heard coaches say similar things like that in the past, and then they move on to bigger and better things. But I think that the loss to who was their bad loss to?
UTSA on the road.
Yeah, Texas San Antonio. So they his name has kind of fallen down again, but with this win against Memphis and them kind of climbing a little bit. I know Daniel, you sent me sent all of us the projected playoff with Tulane playing Georgia,
mm-hmm.
which would be huge for Tulane to make the playoff. I think that raises his star. Maybe he's somebody you look at. I still don't think that LSU takes a coach from another Louisiana school, just cause it just doesn't, it just doesn't feel right. Like it feels like you got to go get somebody bigger. Of a bigger name than that. The one that I saw a little bit of talk about, and it's funny you bring up A&M. I mean, not A&M. You bring up Texas Tech. Jerry Maguire is the coach of Texas Tech, has really built a great program and has done it with a very strong donor base and him being like a really good like donor relations portal kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like an under the radar Lane Kiffin. I saw a few people on Twitter talking about it. Of course, the private jet tracker, people saying, oh, private jet has flown from Baton Rouge to
Lubbock.
Lubbock or it was from Lubbock to Baton Rouge, regardless. So maybe that's somebody to look at. I wouldn't, he's not one of my hot board, I would say. I think that Lane Kiffin's the number one target for LSU right now.
He just signed an extension.
Wasn't it in the drawer?
Do you really think that he would go through all that and they'd make an announcement and then he would just pull out and go, actually, going to LSU. Thank you, though.
I don't know.
He did leave Tennessee high and dry after one season, but that was for his dream. That was for his dream job, though. I imagine like he came up in the ranks at USC and that became available and they reached out to him and he said, abso-effing-lutely. I mean, I said this years ago. I don't know that Kiffin leaves Ole Miss for, I don't know. I mean, I feel like he, if he did it with LSU, he would, you know, if the Raiders came or someone, NFL team came calling, and if that was still his dream job, like if he still felt like he had something to prove, he would do it. So I don't know. But the fact that they're going to offer him like what, $12 million a year? I mean, is LSU going to match that? He did say, a week or two ago, I'm not going to be motivated by money. So he's motivated to extend with Ole Miss because, like, where else is he going to coach for now? But, I mean, are they really going to win a championship? Maybe not. Maybe the motivation is he goes to LSU and he sees the opportunity to win a championship, although this would have been the year, actually. But do you think that's what would motivate him, is the opportunity to win a championship? Because obviously Ole Miss has got enough to pay him $12 million a year. I mean, what else does he need?
$12 million is a lot of money. You got to offer a pretty strong incentive to avoid that. I guess if LSU is willing to fire Brian Kelly and all the money involved with that, then there must be some sort of plan in place.
You can't go in half cocked to this. You can't fire Kelly and then be like, all right, now we're going to get like the JV coach from the local middle school.
Yes, one would hope that there's some sort of plan like that, at least, and they're not just doing things moment to moment to appease the mob, which is possible, I suppose. And I just wanted to do a thorough search. I personally wasn't expecting any announcement until after the season's over. There's always the buzz like, oh, LSU's going to announce Nick Saban on Tuesday. It's like, well, I don't know if that's really going to happen. Just keep an eye on things overall and let it build. We know coaches like to say, I would never leave this program for somewhere else. I mean, this is kind of unrelated, like the Jim Schlossnagel at Texas A&M. I will never leave Texas A&M. And like 6 hours later, he's putting on the Longhorn jersey. So money talks and prestige talks, and hopefully LSU has enough to offer to lure the right guy for the right price. And I guess Verge has his hands full now because this is the first big test for him. And basically no matter who he picks or who the whatever powers that be that are picking it are, there's going to be outrage in some sense and other people loving it, but hopefully it's a little bit more enthusiasm. I just want to get a guy who is enthusiastic about LSU and the program and wants to have success, like, and not just necessarily a businessman filling the uniform for a couple of years.
Right. Well, and he's already said that people have reached out. Like there's already coaches interested, like reached out.
Talking Tiggs exclusive, I can already tell you one of them who has reached out and is very interested and who has great enthusiasm for the program. And his name's Ed Orgeron.
Wait, to be head coach or just a coach?
I think he'd be the janitor. He just wants back in that building.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He's just rattling the door.
He will wrestle recruits in the locker room as he's cleaning it. That's funny. But anyway, all that going on. So, I mean, LSU still got to finish out the season. We still got a recruiting search. And meanwhile, all this is going on. Basketball season has quietly started. And Matt McMahon just came in and blew the doors off of who do we play?
The state of Tarleton.
There we go. Tarleton State. Thank you. But hey, LSU won by like 40 points or something like that. So I don't know.
Be fooled by the basket. I watched like a little bit of the Tarleton State game, and it's a bunch of random people who I had never heard of before, but they're out there in LSU jerseys. But don't be fooled when they gobble up all these cupcakes, because they're non-conference schedule is literally like no name after no name. So check back in around like January 2nd or 3rd once the SEC schedule starts, because we've seen this story before.
We've been down this road before. Wasn't LSU like undefeated last year?
Yeah, or they'll finish the non-conference. 20 games? Yeah, they'll finish non-conference like 13-1. You're like, okay, we're not that bad. Like, this could be a season. And then they immediately go 2-17 in SEC play. So don't get your hopes too high. They had a couple nice performances, but I guess just keep this one in the back of your mind.
Yes, and I don't know, keep this in the back of your mind. Maybe Verge is too. He's like, this might be my first difficult conversation as AD, but if it has to be done, it has to be done. I don't know. I think LSU's been able to either sustain certain legacies with coaching hires, aka Jay Johnson. Football, I don't know. I mean, they've managed to keep the titles going every so often. Brian Kelly was a miss, but that's okay. I mean, we're still within our window, I think. But men's basketball, ever since Del Brown, we have just not. I mean, we've had some, like, I know that John Brady took us to the Final Four back in 06, but other than that, it's been nothing. Meanwhile, all these other SEC teams that were, you know, in the cellar basically with basketball have revived or incinerated a program. LSU has not been able to. I don't know that the McMinn can do that this year. It remains to be seen, but I don't know, maybe that's some other place, because whoever, I mean, we have an AD now. I mean, even Scott Woodward said this. It's like, we've, you know, this is an area we can definitely capitalize on. I mean, not verbatim, but he's basically saying, yeah, we, you know, we should be competing in basketball too. There's no reason. I agree.
Hey, Alabama just beat like the top five team in St. John's this past weekend.
Yeah, they double dipped on Saturday because they beat St. John's in the morning and then LSU in the afternoon or the evening. So the tide was rolling.
So I mean, if Alabama was, like, to your point, Scott, like, Alabama was a basketball team that had no. I mean, I think LSU has a better history of basketball than Alabama does. Yeah. And I mean, they made the tournament and made a run last year. And I mean, Nate Oates has done a great job with that program. Why can't that be us?
Absolutely.
Of course, some people would say that was us, and that Will Wade had Nate Oates's number for years, and then we fired him like a dog.
Well, didn't we just hire somebody that maybe could bring Will Wade back?
That's a good point. Some people have said that.
Matt McMahon doesn't work out.
True.
But wait, could you tell me where Mr. Roos came from?
That would be McNeese State.
McNeese. That sounds familiar. Wait, where's Will Wade now?
Well, he was at McNeese. Now he's at North Carolina State.
Okay, there we go. Fair enough. But you can see where I'm going with this. Changing the guards, maybe a change in attitude, changing the culture.
I think the main thing would be, if I'm Will Wade, like, I think I love it. I love the idea. I think that's something that my mind initially, like, right at jump to when I heard that Wade Roos was going to be the guy. But I if I'm Will Wade, do I leave the ACC, NC State, to go back to a program that got rid of me? Now, a lot of that was Scott Woodward versus Will Wade. Scott and Will Wade never got along. So I think moving Scott Woodward along maybe opens the door a little bit. But I don't know. There's something about that ACC basketball. It's kind of like the SEC in football. So you'd have to give them a really attractive offer.
Well, I don't know. I'd say the SEC in basketball is catching up to the ACC.
It is. No, you're right. Yeah.
But anyway, anything else that y'all wanted to toss out there before we head out for the evening?
I think that's all.
I would just say, like I previewed a little bit earlier in the podcast, spent the afternoon at the box yesterday. A lot to be excited about on the diamond. I know we're a few months away from LSU baseball, but there's a lot of talent on this team, a lot of new bats. Get used to hearing Zach York's name. He's going to be taking over for Bear Jones at first base. He's pretty much the size of like two Bear Joneses put together. He's a big old boy, and every time he hits the ball, it's a missile. So looking forward to that. John Peterson, the brother of Josh, you know, he's looking good. He's hitting the ball a mile. Also Derek Curiel's put on 20 pounds and it's noticeable. So
yeah,
there's a lot to be excited about.
Is Josh though, is John like, is this just at the plate or you see him like in the field too? Like at a specific,
he is noticeably, quicker at third. Like I feel like he's a little bit quicker on his feet, playing well in the field, but his bat is really what I've noticed. I've been to, I think four or five of these, inter squads, and he's looking good. Also, a true freshman, Zion Theophilus. He's a right-handed pitcher. He pitched yesterday, looked really good. I mean, anytime you see a true freshman, you know, dealing against a roster like this, because I was sitting there thinking about it, like, you know, it's not going to get much better. Like in these inter squads, for some, this might be better. This will be better than some of the teams they play, right? Like just the talent on the field. So he was throwing real well.
Right on. Well, you heard it here, folks. Tommy says it's safe to bet your 401ks on LSU baseball next year. I know I'm going
to
be doing the same.
Book your ticket to Omaha.
Go Omaha 26. T-shirts will be available. Please reach out to Tommy. I think that'll pretty much do it for us here on Talkin' Tigs. Stop me if I'm wrong. But until next week, we'll have the Arkansas game as well as any other college football and or coaching search and or other LSU news. So check back in with us. But until then, hope everyone has a great week and stay safe. And you continue to stay tuned because we will definitely talk to you next time right here on Talking Tigs.